Welcome to Whipple's Press Box Podcast, where we discuss the latest topics in the professional world of sports. Enjoy our exclusive interviews with athletes, coaches, insiders, and fans. And now, here's your host, Gary Whipple.
Let the scoreboard watching begin. With the NFL regular season heading toward the finish line, a host of teams are battling to secure a playoff spot. One of them is the Green Bay Packers, who could significantly enhance their playoff chances with a victory Sunday over the Vikings at Lambeau Field. Good day. I'm Gary Whipple, and I'm delighted to be joined by Rob Reichel of Forbes.com and Connolly Media for another riveting and insightful Packers podcast. Hello, partner.
Hello, young fella. How you doing?
Oh, I feel young. I feel like I'm 69 now.
Beats the alternative, Gary.
Oh, you aren't kidding. Hey, we got just a ton of topics to cover in this podcast. But before we get into the good stuff, let's talk a little bit about the Sunday night game between the Eagles and the Lions. And I assumed you watched it. And it was very, very good game. It was intense. It was highly competitive. Unfortunately, it ended in a controversial pass play. The Lions were called for pass interference, effectively ending their chances of winning the game. And the replays clearly showed, without a doubt, that there wasn't any interference. And to its credit,
Chris Collinsworth of NBC, lashed out at the officials, and they showed it again. And of course, there was no interference, but it wasn't a good look for the NFL, which I've been saying for decades needs to upgrade its officials and make them full-time employees.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Gary. And yes, I'll piggyback that. Major kudos to Collinsworth, because there's a lot of guys in the booth, mainly Troy Aikman, that would have been vanilla on that call and not had an opinion and said next to nothing. So, Gary, I give Collinsworth credit for ripping the league that, in essence, he works for. I get it. He works for, the network, but the network is in bed, obviously, with the league on so much of this. The league, they don't have the problem yet that the NBA does. With the Portland Trailblazers scandal, and now the NBA is digging into LeBron and the Lakers and stuff like that. But it'll be coming, Gary. It's a matter of time. When all these leagues, welcomed legalized gambling, you can put a prop bet on anything from Josh Jacobs' rushing yards to how many hot dogs that guy over in Section K is going to eat these days, right? And you can do it throughout the game, Gary. There's always moving targets, and you can bet to your heart's content, and people do. And when they opened up, their world to legalized gambling, Gary, we were taught in journalism school, you and me both, question everything, right? Question everything. And they are up for more scrutiny right now than ever before in terms of questioning everything that goes on, from officiating to point shaving. They are under a greater microscope than ever before. And a call like that in a major game, I think 90% of the audience that, Gary, it always used to be, right, the conspiracy people. It was the conspiracy theorists out there. It was the tinfoil hat crowd, right? Yep. That would say, oh, you're nuts looking into this. Gary, I have a feeling moving forward, we're going to hear about a new scandal every month, if not sooner, because there is just way too much information readily available to too many people. It can be sent in the blink of an eye and a text, and you can get an hour ahead of Vegas in terms of getting some money down. If you know this trainer, or this guy who works for the team, or that guy is this player playing tonight? Is that player playing? So I think this, what we've seen with Portland, potentially the Lakers, you saw today, Gary, the University of New Orleans had a basketball player that, admitted to throwing games in the last college basketball season. Gary, this is going to become a monthly, a weekly story. And when the NFL doesn't, it is such a bad look right now for the NFL. When they don't take care of their issues and their problems, and you hit it exactly right, that's the perfect starting point. Make these guys full-time officials to start with. But then, Gary, also upgrade all that technology is available to you. They almost need to tear this thing down and go right back to the guts of the whole thing and start the officiating process over, because right now we have seven officials in an NFL game. You have a replay official up in the press box. Every year, Gary, they seem to add like a new little wrinkle or a twist, right? To help these guys out on the field who, right? It's becoming more and more evident year by year. They're just in over their heads.
You know what, Rob? I agree with every single point you made. And I thought of this as you were talking. Even the replay guys, how can you trust them? You know?
Of course.
They could be on the take as well, you know?
Gary, that Luke Musgrave play yesterday right before half that got overturned and LaFleur won the challenge. I don't know how there was enough evidence to overturn that one and say it was an incomplete pass and not a fumble by Musgrave. It looked to me like he made a football move.
I agree.
You know, right, Gary, they say time and time again, it has to be 100% conclusive for them to overturn a call. Well, the call on the field there was a fumble. I don't know how they would have ever seen enough there. So, I mean, you're right, Gary, that all these guys have to be under the microscope more so than ever. And I just don't think there's enough people to police, to monitor all this activity that's going on. So, Gary, I mean, I don't think this is the truth. I told you this earlier when we talked before this podcast started. I had a dozen people texting me yesterday saying, is Luke Musgrave on the take, right? And I just texted back, no, he's not a very good football player. And you know, that's the world we live in now. But, you know, to my point, Gary, before, you know, 30 years ago, pre-internet, when it was not as easy to trade information as quickly as we can in the world that we live in today, you could say, yeah, right, the conspiracy theorists, the tinfoil hat crowd, they're probably a little bit out there with a lot of this stuff. But Gary, I think year by year and week by week, especially if the NFL, for example, doesn't put out some of these fires, Gary, this is just going to become more and more the norm, where we see so many of these scandals on a weekly, a monthly basis. And right now, Gary, again, back to my initial point about questioning everything that we were taught in journalism school, I don't know how you can trust anything that goes on with that you watch. I turned off that game last night, Gary, and my first thought was the NFL clearly wants the Eagles in the Super Bowl again, or the NFL obviously wants the Eagles in an NFC championship game. They want no part of Detroit moving forward. And I don't think that's a conspiracy theory deal at all, Gary. I think most rational humans would have watched that game last night and said, somebody inside that organization, whatever, inside the NFL, did not want the Lions to win that football game. It was nonsense, Gary.
Yeah, you know what, Rob? I had the same initial reaction. I hate to say it, but the call wasn't made by the nearest official. There was an official about 5 yards, 6 yards away along the sideline that had an excellent view of the play, and he called it incomplete, you know? All of a sudden, out of nowhere comes the flag. Yep. And like I said, I was just like, my God, somebody's on the take. And it's horrible, because once an organization loses its credibility, it's in big time trouble. And, you know, you can't allow these leagues, whether it's the NBA, Major League Baseball, or the NFL, to become the WWE. You know, you look at these things and they're all fixed. You know, just I don't want to harp on the NBA stuff, but it's gotten to the point with the Lakers that the NBA is requesting their cell phones.
Right.
You don't request cell phones unless you got some serious, serious problems on your hand. You know, if I was the head of the Players Association, I'd come back and say, okay, we'll turn our phones over. You turn over yours.
That'd be a good chess move, Gary.
Yeah, you know what I mean? 100%, but right. I mean, if it gets to the point where the NFL is going to come along and say, hey, everybody in the Packers, turn your cell phones. I mean, what has the sport become?
Right, so. Right. It's obviously one you can't trust. And you're right, Gary. They almost, my thought is they need to start this thing over. These seven guys on the field are it's just too much for them in general, Gary. You know, and again, you've got that replay official in the press box. This year, in the last couple of years, they've added that replay assistance that they'll go to from time to time. But even that, Gary, there's no consistency with that. It's like, okay, well, replay assistant says we're gonna change this call or not change that call or whatever. The coach has his couple of challenges along the way. They keep adding these new levels, Gary, and I just think they have to gut the whole system, start it from the ground up, And with all this technology that we have, find a better system than we have in place right now. Because right at this point in time, who was that NBA official, Gary? Tim Donahue or whatever his name was?
Yeah.
Was on the take all these years. I don't know how you can trust any of these guys moving forward.
No, exactly. And, you know, Rob, I got a little taste of this. Actually, it was a big taste of this way back before you made a grand appearance on this earth. Back in, I believe, 1963, and I remember it as vividly as anything, my dad and I are driving around, and all of a sudden we hear that Paul Hornig had been suspended, he and Alex Karras, for gambling. I think it was 1963, and I forget, I was probably about 5'6" or whatever at the time. I broke down crying. I cried for like 2-3 hours, and I go, how could one of my heroes, you know, be caught gambling and ruin the game? And I'll tell you what, ever since then, in the back of my mind, I've always thought of that.
Well, again, it is under the spotlight right now more than ever, and the league has an image problem. And the biggest problem they have right now, Gary, is there's no transparency.
None.
They refuse to, you know, to address this, and they need to get out ahead of it from a PR standpoint. They need to put out fires before they even begin, and they need to have, you know, far more transparency with the general public and really what's become the betting public. It's a genie at this point you're not putting back in the bottle, right? There's too much money in this entire gambling thing. They're not going to pull back in terms of some of these relationships they have with random sites and things like that. And you know, but Gary, this is Roger Goodell's league right now, and it's not one. Number one, I've said this for the last 20 years, and you know, I say it on the podcast time and time again. It's completely been watered down in terms of the physicality. You can't touch anybody along the way. He's destroyed kickoffs. I mean, the fact you have to declare an onside kick these days, Gary, can you imagine in Major League Baseball, Gary, if you were going to lay down a bunt and you had to tell the third baseman you were going to bunt the ball? You know, just it's some of these asinine moves that he's put in, kind of like your NBA guys with this stupid winter tournament they have or whatever that silly thing is. They try to.
You know what's great about it? It's the Emirates Cup. It's not like the Delta Cup or the United Airlines.
Oh, my God.
Or, you know, some American Airlines company that's sponsoring this.
Right.
Some Middle Eastern, you know.
You know your leagues and sport is in trouble when you have to resort to that kind of gimmicky garbage, right? It's the minor league team, right, that pulls out the clown to run around the bases in the third inning or something like that. So, no, Gary, the NFL has a problem. There's no question. It becomes even bigger on a night like last night in one of the biggest football games of the year. And you leave, you give up 3.5 hours of your night for that, and you leave totally unfulfilled. Hey, maybe Philly deserved to win the game. Maybe they didn't. But I left, Gary, and I think most of the public in America left thinking, we don't really know who the better team was. That game was decided by the guys in stripes.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it was a bad, bad look for the NFL. And, you know, one thing I would do, though, and you know it's not going to happen because money talks, is suspend all the gambling commercials on NFL games. And even like ESPN, every commercial basically is, you know, some kind of gambling site. And they're promoting this. They're not trying to, you sure. know, nip it in the bud. They're saying, hey, this is great. Go out and bet. But, you know, Rob, bet responsibly.
Right.
Instead of putting $10,000 down, only put down $5,000 this week, you know?
Gary, it wasn't that long ago that, you know, Jimmy the Greek was cutting edge, right? Oh my God, Jimmy Greek is on NFL Today in the morning, and the world had a heart attack about that. And you know, that was only what, 40 years ago? It's crazy where it's gone. But you're right, money talks. They're not putting that genie back, and this is the world we live in now. And for the most part, I'm fine with it, but they need a better plan, and they need a better officiating system in place to take away such, you know, such moments and such bad looks like they did last night.
So how many points do you give the Packers then in Sunday's game?
How many points will I give them against Minnesota?
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I was trying to piggyback off of our gambling discussion here. But anyways, let's move on. I think you and I made some valid points. And, you know, the Packers do play the Vikings on Sunday, and it's a big game for both of them. The Packers are 6-3-1. And they're still not only in the hunt for the playoffs, but for the top spot in the NFC North Division. But I'll tell you what, this is a monster game for the Vikings. They are 4-6 and teetering on being eliminated from the playoffs. And if you're the Packers, you'd love to deliver a knockout blow. I mean, it's just one less team you got to deal with, coming down the stretch. If the Packers get a wild card instead of winning the division. So it should be an interesting game.
Gary, they're 4-6, Minnesota. They're 1-4 at home. They've been
1-4 at
bad.
home.
They're 1-4 at home. Yeah.
Wow.
They're actually better on the road, 3-2. I didn't look at those splits in terms of how many games their Carson Wentz started on the road to beef up that record. But they were a better football team, Gary, with Carson Wentz than they are right now with JJ McCarthy. And Green Bay has every opportunity, like you said, to deliver the knockout punch, and I think they will. The Vikings, Gary, look like a team that's on life support. You know me, Gary. I adore their head coach. I think Kevin O'Connell is a wizard. I think he's a genius. He got the best years out of Kirk Cousins. He saved Sam Darnold's career last year, Gary. But where I'm going with that is, I don't know if he can save JJ McCarthy. And
Really?
I don't know. It's early, right? It's
Yeah,
early.
yeah.
The
I mean,
early.
I'm not saying you're wrong because
I don't
I
know,
mean,
but right. That's what I'm saying. But his passer rating, Gary, of 61.7, McCarthy's, that is, ranks 45th in the league out of quarterbacks with at least 14 pass attempts. Okay.
yeah.
So 45 or 46 quarterbacks have thrown the ball at least 14 times. McCarthy's 45. Guess who's 46, Gary?
I
I
have
figured
no
you'd get it
idea.
right away.
Huh?
I figured you might get it right away.
Oh my God, there's so many candidates. I don't know where to begin.
Only because it's fresh, Gary. It's Shedeur Sanders,
Oh,
and he's a distant 46, right? It couldn't happen to a better family.
Do you think he's on an NFL roster next year?
That's a great question. Yeah, I don't know.
I have
He's
some
start.
serious doubts about that.
It sounds like he'll start again next week against the Raiders. So,
Yeah.
we'll probably start to get a better indicator of that. But, back to Minnesota. Gary, last year, Darnold was 35 touchdowns, 12 picks, 103 passer rating. They let him walk, thinking they were going to be okay or bring in Aaron Rodgers. And listen, bringing in Aaron Rodgers wasn't going to solve their problems either. Rodgers is done. He's 42 years old here in a couple of weeks. So I get it. Go with the young first-round pick from 2024. But Gary, they've been really bad with him. I mean, McCarthy, 6 touchdowns, 8 picks. Like I mentioned, the passer rating is under 62. The offense, Gary, a year ago was ninth in points. Now it's 22nd. The offense last year was 10th in yards. Now it's 27th. Most of those guys are back, Gary. It's the same wide receiver group. It's mostly the same offensive line. It's the same running backs with Jones and Jordan Mason and Gary, I'm going to throw a funny stat at you that's absolutely crazy. McCarthy's made the last two starts, okay? And I think Jordan Addison's a hell of a receiver for Minnesota, right? McCarthy's thrown him the ball 18 times in the last two games, 5 receptions.
There you go. There
18
you go.
targets, 5 receptions. I went and looked at a few of those on the All-22 today, Gary. There were throws so ridiculously far out of Addison's reach. Will Chamberlain wasn't going to catch those balls. Knute Bolt wasn't going to catch those balls. It was remarkable how inaccurate McCarthy was on some simple outs, Gary, 10-yard outs to the sideline or something like that. Green Bay is catching a break that this isn't Carson Wentz, that it is McCarthy. It's starting to feel more and more like just almost like a rebuild, reload kind of year for the Vikings, Gary, as they try to get a young quarterback to get it figured out. And if they do lose to Green Bay on Sunday, you can start writing their obituary, I think, right away, because they'd be 4-7. They're not going to rip off 6 wins in a row to
No, not at all. No
playoffs from that
chance.
point. So your point is valid, Gary. They'll come playing with their hair on fire. I just don't know if it's going to matter that much because if you don't have a quarterback in this league, like the great Ron Wolf said time and time again, you don't have a chance. And right now, we don't know if Minnesota has a quarterback.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you what, they've lost two straight. They've lost four of their last five games. And one of those games was to the Chargers, Rob. They crushed them. It was just absolutely brutal, 37-10. I said this last year. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but Darnold got thrown under the bus basically for that last playoff game, and he did not play well. But again, if you looked at the offensive line, he didn't have any time to pass. He was constantly under pressure. And they decided to move on. And it's because McCarthy was the 10th pick in the 2024 draft. If I was them, I would have tried, and you and I touched on this, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, I would have tried to work out a deal with Darnold, saying, hey, we'll give you a 2-3 year deal. We want you to mentor McCarthy, something like they've done in Green Bay. And if Darnold faltered, then throw in the kid. But my gosh, Darnold is lighting it up again out in Seattle. He's not going to be the MVP, but he's got a chance to be in the top 10, I think, in voting.
Well, he did probably until yesterday, Gary, when he threw picks against the Rams and the Sam Darnold haters, and I'm one of them. I won't lie to you. I do not want Sam Darnold in a big game. And we'll get into this in a little bit. I think that's why I like Green Bay a lot more when we get to the postseason than Seattle, is because the difference in quarterback. And Jordan Love has gotten it done in big moments at times in the playoffs. Sam Darnold has not.
Yeah,
Gary, you think how he finished last year, right? The terrible performance in week 18 against Detroit, really bad in the playoff game. And that's what sealed his fate more than anything in Minnesota,
absolutely. No,
right?
no question.
I think the Vikings said, can we get to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl with this guy? And they all internally decided, absolutely not, we can't. And I'm with you, Gary. Sam Darnold's one of the 10 best quarterbacks right now in football, but I again, I don't want him in a in
But
a
first,
playoff
you got to get to the big game.
game. Right. Or to a playoff game in general. And you remember last year, he was dreadful in their playoff game against the Rams. So.
And again, my point was that he didn't have a chance. The Rams had a really good defensive scheme for him, and their offense line didn't handle it. So I agree, he had a poor game, but to throw him under the bus like that, I don't know. But anyways, you know what's crazy? I didn't realize this. I knew McCarthy was having a bad season. He's got six touchdowns, eight interceptions. That's like a Terry Bradshaw type start to his career.
Well, Gary, you don't see anyone in today's NFL with passer ratings of 62. I mean,
No, you don't.
as starters, anyways, everything in the league is set up in the last 25, 30 years for offense and for points and for quarter. You can't touch quarterbacks. They get all day to stand back there in the pocket. Even when you do touch them, if you tackle them the right way, they're still going to throw a flag half the time. I don't know if you saw the one yesterday, back to our officiating thing, where a guy in Jacksonville makes a perfectly clean legal sack of Justin Herbert, and here comes the flag, right? It's just everything in today's world is set up for the offenses to succeed. The league wants 37-35, Gary. And so, I mean, I say it all the time, Gary. Brett Favre today would play 25 years and he'd throw 40 touchdowns. Brett Favre would have 1,000 touchdowns if he played today, Gary. I
No,
wholeheartedly believe that.
yeah, well, I mean, when you think of it, all the major sports have really changed, radically changed. You look at the NBA and all the rules that they've incorporated into the game where they want points. People want to see, action, allegedly good action. But the other thing, speaking of the Vikings offensive line, they got some solid players there, but they were crappy in that playoff game. And so far, Darnold has been, not Darnold, McCarthy's been sacked 15 times. Which is ridiculous considering he's only played five games.
Oh,
So,
that's three a game, Gary. That's about the league average.
three a game?
Yeah, that's about the league average. Two
I
point
bet
five,
Jordan Love's is.
2.5 to 3. Yeah.
Well, do you have the numbers in front of you? See what Jordan Love has.
Okay, give me a second. Yeah, you can fill a little bit of airtime while I dig up this very compelling stat. I'm gonna guess it's way fewer than that.
I don't know, but Love has done a really good
10,
job.
10 games, 16 sacks, and his offensive line is bad. So that's 1.6 per game
Yeah, that's pretty good.
on Love. No, it's good. And again, these guys are bad run. We've talked about this before. Green Bay's offensive line, they're bad run blockers. They're okay in the pass game. But Jordan Love has also been, and we'll get into this from yesterday. he's been really good, I think, for the most part, getting rid of the ball and with his decision making, and even buying time, like on the play yesterday to Savion Williams, for example. So a lot of that too was on the quarterback, right? Caleb Williams took a, you know, the Bears sack numbers last year were off the charts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
With Caleb Williams. And I know they got better on the offensive line, but Williams has also just gotten smarter and quicker with his decision making, for example. So his sacks are way down this year. I haven't watched enough of Minnesota to know this, Gary, but I'm sure as a first time starter in this league, McCarthy is not making decisions quick enough, and it's costing him in terms of those high sack numbers, because that's not a bad offensive line. Minnesota's done a pretty good job beefing up both lines of scrimmage in the last couple off seasons. They've invested heavily in free agency and have really done a nice job beefing up both lines of scrimmage. Gary, I'll be honest, Minnesota's roster, it's a top 10 roster in football. They've got a lot of good players all over the place. But again, if you don't have the quarterback, you just don't have a chance.
Exactly.
And that's going to be the major difference. What'd they go last year? 13-4, 14-3, something like that. They'll fall 7-8 games by the time the season is done, Gary, because they don't have the quarterback. I mean, that position is worth 10 points minimum.
And they don't have a running back. You're touching on Jordan Mason and Aaron Jones. I mean, Aaron Jones has only played, I think, 5 or 6 games. To me, he's close to being done. I mean, there was a reason Green Bay let him go. I mean, you know, he's at the tail end of his career. And if you don't have an offensive line that's giving you time, if you don't have an offensive line that's going to open up big holes, especially for a guy like Jones, you're going to be in trouble. And they are.
No, they are. There's no doubt about it. I mean, and this was the Aaron Jones, and it's obviously gotten worse that Green Bay had the last couple seasons. You know, LaFleur had figured that out, right, with Aaron Jones. Keep him to 150 carries, 180, somewhere in that range during the regular season. Heck, if he misses a month in November, as long as he's healthy by January, that's absolutely fine. But you're right, Gary. He's only got 52 carries right now through 10 games. That's 5 carries a game. I love Aaron Jones. He's one of the all-time Packer greats on and off the field, even more so off the field, Gary, just in terms of being a great human being. Yes, sir. No, sir. With everything, just a first class human being. Trying to think, I think he was, did Ted take him in 17 maybe, Gary? So this would be year 9. That seems right. I think he had 7.
Yeah, you're definitely in the ballpark. I'm not sure.
He had 7 in Green Bay, and this would be 2 in Minnesota. I remember he always told me he wanted to get 12-14, and I remember thinking he's crazy. He's not going to get that many. He's probably, if he gets to 10, that'll be really good.
Yeah, that's a great career for a running back. You know what I mean?
Great. Yeah, 100%, right? But I'm with you a little bit, Gary. He turns 31 in – I'm just looking here in 2 weeks. I can't see that he gets to 33 or something like that in the league. So it's too bad. I'm anxious to see him Sunday, Gary, to see if he still has any kind of burst whatsoever when he gets into, you know, into space and in the open field. Cause man, that guy had jets, and we'll see if he's even remotely close to the running back that, you know, shined for the Packers and killed the Cowboys a couple years ago in that playoff game, right? But you're right, Gary. They don't have the running game, I'm sure, that they anticipated at the start of the year. They'll probably have to tear that position up in the offseason.
Yeah, while McCarthy is trying to find his way, Jordan Love has firmly established himself as a high-end QB. The young Packer quarterback, he's still a young guy. He's played pretty well.
Year 6, Gary, that's not young anymore.
Yeah, he's got another good 10 years in him.
He might. You're right. He might.
You know? But I thought he's had a pretty darn good season. But I thought yesterday, Rob, even though the numbers might not reflect it, I thought that was one of the best games of his career.
Couldn't agree more. First thing I wrote yesterday, Gary, after the game, so a second thing I wrote, ignore the numbers, like you said, 13-24, 174, 2 touchdowns, no picks. That's a passer rating of 105.2. Gary, there were 7 dropped passes.
Is that what the final death toll was?
Yeah. Gary, you need to start reading my stories. You'd know that.
I do. I read them religiously.
7 drops, Gary. 3 by Romeo Doubs, 2 by Musgrave. Well, technically, Musgrave got credit on the 1 for a catch. That was a negative 1. And then
Doubs had a couple, right?
Doubs had 3. Watson had one. Wicks had one. It doesn't matter. And Musgrave had one. I forget the seventh off the top of my head, Gary. So I did this before, Gary. Okay, people are going to drop passes in the league, right? It happens from time to time. So I said, let's say they only have two drops and not seven. And I gave Love, I went back and I just did the math on it. Love averaged 7.5 yards per pass attempt yesterday. And I said, okay, let's say he completes those balls. Let's give him 8 on those. And that's even low. He probably would have had 10, but let's give him 8. So I redid the math, Gary. If Love goes 19 of 24 in that game, if they only drop 2 passes and not 7, I don't remember him having 7. They couldn't catch the ball last year, and I don't think they had 7 in a game. But so, Gary, if he goes, actually, it'd be 18 out of 24. Let's give him about 250 yards with those same numbers. His passer rating jumps to almost 135 if his guys could catch the ball. I mean, it's crazy how his guys killed him. Oh, I think Fitzpatrick, the tight end, had a drop, Gary, as well, somewhere yesterday.
He threw the ball exquisitely, though. I mean, it seemed like every pass was basically on the mark, you know?
And, Gary, that wind apparently was just ridiculous in terms of how it was swirling. And you look at it, you're right, Gary. His accuracy was an A+. His decision-making was an A+. We know he has A+ arm talent. That's not an issue. I thought it was his best game of the year. You could argue Pittsburgh. You could argue Detroit in week one, and you could certainly make a valid case. But it's in that discussion, Gary. He is the reason they won that football game yesterday. As I watched later on, I actually recorded the Rams-Seahawks game, Gary, and watched that. And then I watched the Sunday night game. So I watched Sam Darnold with a really good football team. And I watched Jared Goff with a really good football team that couldn't move them. And Jared Goff has better pieces around him than Jordan Love has.
No question.
And I watched them play the Lions against Philly and Seattle against the Rams, right? So two top five level defenses right now. And they couldn't get anything done. And my first thought was, Green Bay has a chance in the playoffs, Gary, much more to me right now than Detroit or Seattle, because they have Jordan Love, and those other teams are going to go into the playoffs with Jared Goff, who cannot do a thing when he has to move 18 inches outside the pocket, Gary. He's so ridiculously bad on the move. If anything breaks down around him, the play is over. And then Sam Darnold, who seems to throw the ball to the wrong team time and time again in these big games.
I'm going to have to get you together with Sam, you know, kind of.
Hey, like I said, Gary.
Have a meeting of the minds here.
Gary, I love Sam Darnold on a Sunday in October against Arizona or a game in, you know, November against the Cowboys, these garbage defenses. But, man, you put him up against the elite level teams. The teams, Gary, you know this, that you have to beat to go to a Super Bowl. I don't want Sam Darnold.
Yeah, no, there'd probably be, of course, there's probably at least 10, 12 guys he'd rather have over him in that case. But, you know, the thing that really, really struck a chord with me during Sunday's game was when Jordan Love got hurt, and instead of just like walking to the locker room, the dude sprinted. I mean, he was running hard to get into the locker room. About 5 minutes later, he's running hard to get back on the field. And I thought that one play, you won't find it in any of the stats, told me so much about Jordan Love and his commitment to the team. I can't tell you how many guys I've seen over the years, they get hurt and they take their good-natured time, get into the locker room, and they could say, oh, you know, I don't want to play, you know. And how he turned that all around so quickly really made an impression with me, at least.
Gary, you know how many snaps Malik Willis played? And let's give Malik Willis a lot of credit. He was tremendous.
He was tremendous. He did a great job.
Yep. You know how many snaps he played, though?
6.
7. Good guess.
Okay.
And you're right. If Love doesn't have 4.55 speed getting back to the locker room, or, you know, to go and get his x-ray done and then race back to the field, that's probably double that snap total. And maybe Green Bay is fine, and maybe they don't miss a beat if it's Malik Willis. But Green Bay needed every bit of Jordan Love in that football game on Sunday to come out of there victorious. The vitriol and the hate, you know, we live in such a such a wild, weird world right now where Jordan Love has a bad game against Philly or things aren't super pretty 2 weeks in a row against Carolina and the Eagles, and Packer Nation is saying they have the wrong quarterback, right? Why did they give this guy 5 years and $275 million? They're going nowhere fast with Love, right? Things change as quick as the seasons do in these parts, opinions around this football team. Gary, yesterday showed, because if Green Bay had an average quarterback yesterday, they're not winning that football game. I'll continue to harp it and bang the drum. Green Bay has a top 6 to 8 quarterback in football right now with Jordan Love. And he, everything was going wrong around him. Gary, I thought this many times in that game yesterday as guys kept dropping the ball. What do you think Aaron Rodgers' reaction would have been, Gary?
He would have went to the locker room and stayed in the locker room.
Gary, he might have murdered Luke Musgrave. I mean, who knows, right? Aaron's a little bit out there these days. And what does Jordan Love do? He just puts his head down. He soldiers on. He says next play, and he goes and he gets it done. I mean, that's what one of the greatest things about Jordan Love is, his demeanor never changes. You don't know if they're up 17-0 or down 17-0.
Yeah,
you
good
know,
point.
You don't know if they're trying to run out the clock or rally for a late game touchdown to win the thing, right? He is a constant. He is so consistent every snap, every play, and he's like that through the week, Gary, in the locker room. And that's why those guys over there appreciate him, because it wasn't always that way in the past with the quarterback who was there prior to him and started for what, 15, 16 seasons. So that's one of the greatest strengths that Jordan Love has.
Oh, I totally agree. It reminds me in a lot of ways of the demeanor Bart Starr had too. Bart Starr was just Mr. Calm, never, ever got flustered, at least, you know, during the game. No, I couldn't agree with you more. And it's nice. I think that kind of demeanor attitude kind of rubs off on the other players too, that let's face it, everybody's going to screw up at some point in the game, you know, and if Love doesn't make a big deal about it, hey, you move on, you forget about it and move on. So, you know, the other thing I really thought has contributed to the maturation of Love this year, he's thrown 15 touchdowns, Rob, just 3 interceptions. And I think in the last 5 games, I should double check this, he's only had like 1 pick, you know? I mean, to get that kind of consistency, you got a chance to do some good things.
You know, he's got to be smarter, obviously, Gary, and slide, and not try to take on defensive players and end up injuring himself. And hey, I get it. He took some heat last year, right, for not running enough. He's overcompensating at times this year and running a little bit more. But Gary, to me, he's the biggest reason listen. Not everything has gone perfect. They're sitting here at 6-3-1. I think we all thought they'd be a little bit better than that. It hasn't always been pretty on the offensive side of the ball. The head coach has been under some scrutiny. Things have not gone great on offense for the past month. But the reason, Gary, to me, that they still have a chance to be a real player in this whole thing and throughout the course of the postseason, if they can make it there, is they're going to have a quarterback that is going to rival almost anybody that's in the playoffs, Gary. Would I take Mahomes over him and Josh Allen, of course, and people like that. I'd probably still take Jalen Hurts because of the winning track record, but and Stafford too. He's got a Super Bowl and he might be in the hunt for an MVP. But after that, Gary, you can put Jordan Love up there with anybody that's going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, you brought up Malik Willis's name before, and man, are the Packers fortunate to have a quarterback of that ilk come in. I mean, they didn't skip a beat, and you could tell his teammates respect him, you know? I mean, he went in there and ran the offense efficiently. Man, I'll tell you what, and I'll give LaFleur some credit too, because he changes his play calling, obviously, with Willis, who's, you know, obviously a better runner than Jordan Love. But, man, I'll tell you what, if I was a team, you know, there's some bad teams. There's probably like 6-8 really bad teams out there. I'd be tempted to see what I'd have to give up for Malik Willis and if the Packers would budge, because I think he's one of those fringe starters. But if you cater the offense around him, I think he could be pretty good.
Okay, so Gary, his contract is up when the year is done. All right. So you wouldn't have to give Green Bay anything. First of all, you would have to make that trade by the deadline.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So you can, he's a free agent.
He'll be a free agent in March of 26.
Wait, why wouldn't they have extended him by now?
Green Bay?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure they'll try to keep him when free agency arrives. Yeah. But I think, like you touched on, Willis is going to want to see what's out there. But Gary, let's be honest, right? I mean, you and I have done this a long time and watched a lot of games. If Malik Willis goes to one of these teams where you say they don't have much of a starter, I don't know who that would be, for example. Let's just say Pittsburgh Rodgers retires.
And, or like the Browns. He's probably better than anybody the Browns have.
There is no way you're going better than 6-11 over the course of a season. He's no different than Jacoby Brissett. He's worse than Jacoby Brissett, Gary, and Brissett's a backup.
Yeah, I get it.
You know what I'm saying? Gary, the best, and I've talked to Willis about this a couple times, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the offseason plays out. I think the best thing that could happen for both sides is that Willis stays in Green Bay. They pay him reasonable money, 2-3 years. Gary, he's going to go somewhere else. They might say, hey, we'll let you compete against a rookie or another veteran or something like that. They're not going to win many games. He's going to wind up on the bench. He's in a pretty good situation here in Green Bay. I get it if you're him. You do want to play more and stuff like that and find out what you have. But Gary, I think it's a great marriage right now for both sides, to be honest with you. I would do everything in my power if I'm the Packers to keep him here. The bottom line becomes, right, if he does get one of those tantalizing offers from a team that, you know, just says, hey, we're going to let you compete for the starting job. Almost like, what was it when...
Well,
for example, Seattle signed Matt Flynn 15 years ago or whatever, right? And then they drafted Russell Wilson. It was supposed to be Matt Flynn's team. And then Russell Wilson just beat him out and Matt Flynn kind of faded to black, right? I think that's what would happen with Willis. That's why I think it really does make sense for both parties to find a way to come together and keep him in Green Bay 2 or 3 more years.
Yeah. You know, every time I think of Malik Willis and the thought that I just offered up here, I think back to when the Packers traded for a guy named Jim Delgazio. This is like in the early 70s. He had like a few really good games in Miami, right? He was the hot shot quarterback that was available. And I thought, oh my God, the Packers just made a hell of a move. This kid's got a lot of potential. Well, I think we know that that potential never surfaced, but it's amazing how, you know, a backup can tease other teams into, you know, acquiring you. So
hey, everybody loves the backup, Gary, right? He's the most
what's
popular
that?
Guy. Everybody loves the backup. He's the most popular guy in the building until he has to play consistently.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to keep making these old time references, but another one was,
you're pretty good at it, Gary. You're definitely showing your age tonight.
You know, the only good thing is my memory's still intact.
That is pretty good
to a degree.
But,
so,
but it is week to week, Gary. I'm not confident we can make that same prediction for next week's podcast.
I'm striving for a consistency. It reminds me though, when I was telling you about Hornig when he got suspended, but this is true. Back when the Packers were in their heyday, I can't tell you the number of people that I talked to that thought that Zeke Bradkowski, who was then Bart Starr's backup, should be the starter.
Sure.
I mean, you know, Zeke would come in and show a couple flashes for a series or two. And I mean, a tremendous backup quarterback. But, you know, Bart Starr's a Hall of Famer. You know, I don't think Zeke Bradkowski was ever going to get to that level.
I remember talking to Zeke Bradkowski once, Gary. I did a long interview with him, and he said the best thing that ever happened to his career is he didn't have to play consistently.
There you go.
On a week in, week out, regular basis. So yes, that's the case in a lot of these places. Guys are a number two for a reason. So tip of the hat again to Malik Willis for what he did yesterday. He's in a perfect role right now.
Moving along, I wanted to talk about the kicking game. It used to be that we talked about the kicking game every week on the podcast a couple years ago as the Packers were bringing in one kicker after another and all of them failed. And I thought last year after they brought in Brandon McManus that that position would be stabilized not only last year but this year and maybe even a couple more years. But McManus got injured earlier this year and he hasn't recovered. He's struggled big time. I think he's, what, 11 of 17 on field goals. And Not a good situation, Rob.
No, he's not. LaFleur said earlier today, Gary, a couple hours before we're doing this podcast, he's not going on IR. He probably kicked one too many days last week. They had, obviously, he retweaked or re-injured that quad that he's been battling and fighting. So they had to go to with Haversack, who was, what, 1 of 3 on extra points, right, Gary?
Yeah, 1 of 3. I mean, Rob, I did better in high school.
I will say this, right? That wind, and we saw the flags and the goalposts were just whipping even. I mean, even those big, thick, strong goalposts are moving,
yeah,
Gary.
Yeah.
As those guys. And one of them, let's be honest, was not all his fault. The snap was terrible. Whelan puts the ball down like Charlie Brown, and he's got the ball faced in the wrong direction. He's kicking the laces, Gary. I mean, anybody that knows their football knows it's laces away, right? So you've got to kick the ball, and the laces are aimed the other direction, and Whelan's got the laces aimed right at Haversick. So that's not ideal. But no, I mean, Gary, their kicking situation is a mess right now. It's not good. I think McManus is 39th in the league in terms of percentage. It's 64.7 is his percentage. Haversack hadn't missed a kick until yesterday, and then he goes 1 of 3 on the extra points. I mean, there's a reason he was on the street prior to McManus getting dinged. And Gary, even in the three games McManus came back and kicked after missing a couple games there, he was 4 of 8 on field goals. So do you feel comfortable with him kicking against Minnesota and then going to Detroit and all that kind of stuff? I mean, I don't know. That's what this week's going to tell us, and they'll figure it out at practice. They like their guys, Gary, to kick Wednesday and Friday leading into the game, and then they kick Sunday. McManus went last week, Wednesday, Friday. Everything seemed okay, and then Saturday shows up on the injury report as doubtful. Maybe they've just got to change that this week. He either doesn't kick at all, or he kicks only one of those days. Maybe all he does is kick Thursday or just kick Friday or something like that. Or, Gary, maybe they shut him down again for a couple of weeks and try to make sure that he gets right by the time, I don't know, they go to Denver in mid-December or something like that. But they've got a problem. It's the same level problem as they had with Anders Carlson, that they had with the Narv dog, right, Braden Narveson. All those years, Gary, they had rock star kickers and with Longwell and Crosby, et cetera, and they were Chris Jackie, and you never had to think twice about it. And you didn't last year when McManus was 20-21 on his field goals and he didn't miss an extra point. I mean, the guy had one miss all season long, at least until the playoff game in Philly where he missed a chippy field goal. But no, Gary, it's bad right now. And to me, the answer is, you just have to give McManus the necessary time to get right so you can have him for the final month or whatever, the stretch run of the season, because you don't want to be dealing with this same garbage, do you, in week 17, week 18, whatever, when you're fighting to get in the playoffs and now you're tied with Baltimore late in the game and you're saying, boy, do we trust bringing in McManus or not? Oh, no, you know, that quad is still bugging him. Get him right now, get it fixed, and make sure he's fine for the last month.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you look at the great teams. I mean, they have kickers that they don't bat an eye when they go on the field. They're so confident they're going to make it. I mean, all you have to do is look at the success they've had in Kansas City. I mean, Butker trots out there. It's automatic, you know.
And look McManus at Dallas's guy, Gary.
Huh?
Look at Dallas's guy. My God.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's
the world wouldn't want him, right?
Yeah. When you get into a playoff game, you better have a reliable kicker. And, you know, I couldn't agree with you more. If it means sitting him for the next three games, so be it. But at the same time, they got to win those games too. So they're kind of in a catch-22 situation.
I might be wrong, Gary, but I'm going to give Haversack a little bit of a pass yesterday because of the wind.
Yeah.
And the entire operation on that second extra point was so bad. You know, again, I don't know that Brandon Aubrey would have made that extra point. When the snap is that high, the holder gets it down late, and you're kicking into the laces, not laces away. Maybe the great kickers make that no matter what. But I'm with you, Gary. I mean, I think that's the move right now. You roll the dice on Haversack for the next couple of weeks. You hope that he can kick as well as he did in those couple of games he played. What was that? Cincinnati and Arizona, I think, that he come and play. And you hope things go as well. I mean, he was 10 of 10 on all his kicks prior to yesterday, Gary. 4 of 4 on field goals, 6 of 6 on extra points. So get McManus right. Try it with Haversack. Heck, if Haversack's 1 of 3 again this week, then you bring somebody else in off the street the following week when you go to Detroit for Thanksgiving, and you let your stud kicker get right. Because I still think McManus is really good when he's healthy, Gary. He's just not healthy.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about Whalen a little bit before about the hold. That dude's having, I think, a really good season. I mean, he's done basically everything that's been asked of him.
We're going to talk punters, Gary. What are we doing?
Yeah. What are the T-shirts that are floating around? I don't talk to kickers or whatever. Have you seen those?
I have not.
They've become kind of trendy. I'm not sure where that originated. But, well, didn't LaFleur at one time say he doesn't even talk to his kickers?
He has said he doesn't know anything about kicking, but maybe he said
boy, I'll tell you what, you teed that up for me. He doesn't know anything about kicker.
You're right though, Gary. I mean, I will say that right on Whelan. What's his average, like 51?
Yeah, and he's, you know, doing a great job with directional punting and hang time and everything that goes into being a really good punter.
Hey, Gary, I'm going to throw an interesting one at you, though, too. Here's one our listeners will enjoy. There are 45 players in the National Football League this year that have returned punts, okay?
Yeah.
The three guys who have returned for Green Bay, who I think are Dobbs, Nixon, and is it Melton, maybe? I forget.
Was it Golden, maybe? I don't know.
Golden. You got it. Golden. Yeah. Green Bay's three guys rank 43rd, 44th, and 45th. On punt returns.
Yeah, that tells you something too.
Again, the punter's having a nice year, but the rest of the special teams, like always, are a mess in Green Bay, Gary.
No, I agree with you. It seems like it's been a perpetual nightmare. Every year their special teams have been, you know, pretty bad. So speaking of Anders Carlson,
oh boy.
Where is he kicking, in Spain these days or what?
Good question. I haven't paid much attention. I will say this, Gary. He was one of the nicer kids that have come through that locker room. I really liked him as a human, just not as a guy I'd want kicking for me to win a game in San Francisco in the playoffs, right? Yeah, I'm just looking right now. He may be out of things right now. Yeah, he was released by the Jets June 18th, and he hasn't really been anywhere since then, Gary.
Yeah. You know, there's always a player or two on every team, you know, X factors, who can kind of tilt the field. And I believe in the Packers case, one of those guys is Christian Watson, and he's only played 4 games, I believe, this season, you know, recovering from a serious knee injury. And it took him a little bit to get his game back, get his confidence back, et cetera. But I'll tell you what, on Sunday, he gave you glimpses of what he's capable of doing. And those two touchdown receptions that he made, those were elite. They were big-time catches. And they came after a game last week where I thought he was just horrible at judging a pass from Love. But if this is a sign of things to come, he's going to help the Packers. There's no question about it.
Oh, he'll help him, Gary, and he'll be their number one wide receiver, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Even when Reed, I think, comes back, because we don't know what Jaden Reed's gonna look like when he comes back. And I know Dobbs leads him in catches or whatever, but Christ, Gary, even at 69 or whatever you said, Yar, I think you can hang around with Dobbs in a foot race. So, Gary,
no, I couldn't.
All right,
I'd have a tough time hanging with you.
I'm running better these days, Gary.
There you go. By the way, how many pounds have you shed since we last spoke? You were on quite a roll there.
Yeah, and I'm still doing my due diligence, Gary. We're up to 57.
Holy cow! There you go.
We're getting back to closer to the weight we were when we got married. So
wow,
we're trending in the right direction.
Good for you.
Anyhow, the listeners don't give a damn about that. Here's what I'll say, Gary.
Neither did I, but
I know it was nice of you to ask. You play the nice teddy bear in this podcast for me, Gary.
There you go. So getting back to Mr. Watson.
Go to Watson for a second, Gary. And this is why I like Brian Gutekunst as a general manager. A lot of these little things fly under the radar. When he was rehabbing that injury, and Gary, remember, he was going to become an unrestricted free agent this offseason. You know what Gutekunst did? He gave him a one-year, $13 million contract extension. They have Watson now under contract in 2026. He would have become a free agent here in March. And the way he's closing the season, Gary, he would have been a big-time, you know, player on the free agency market. I mean, people are talking about Romeo Doubs getting $14 million a season when he hits free agency this particular offseason. Think what Watson would have gotten. But that was a really clever move, and he did it for a couple reasons. Number one, we know, and we certainly saw it the second half of his rookie year, and he teases you from time to time. We know what Christian Watson can look like at his best, and it's a top 25, 30 receiver in football. He's a high-level player. And then second, Gary, he is a terrific guy inside that building. Really smart, cerebral, a leader. He cares deeply. Gary, he's a 38 Wonderlic kid. That's a hell of a score on the Wonderlic.
That's only about 1 point above yours.
Well, I won't even tell you what I got. I take it all the time, Gary. I love that test.
Yeah, there you go.
I take all different versions of it. I love that test, actually. It was a interesting move, right, by both parties. The Packers gambled on Watson that he could make it back and be a legitimate player again from that injury. And Watson kind of gambled too and said, all right, you know, I'm gonna stay in Green Bay. That's a nice price. And I'll do that instead of going out and testing the free agent market. It's going to work out really well, I think, Gary, for both sides, because Watson can try to have a big 2026 and then go get the contract that he wants after that. In the interim, the Packers get a really good player at a bargain price. I mean, Christian Watson at that price, $13 million, is going to be a nice deal for them next year if he keeps playing like this. I mean, Gary, he made it back from that knee injury. That happened January 5 of 2025. And he was back on the field this October 26.
Yeah.
That's impressive. 9 months, 3 weeks, Gary, is what he made it back. And I know Packer Nation is praying that the same can happen for Tucker Kraft, right? But the fact that Watson made it back that quick and has come back and played at this level has been remarkably impressive, because you're exactly right. The laser he caught from Malik Willis, not many people have the hands to catch that. I mean, that was – man, that was Ozzie Smith gold glove type deal, that laser he hauls in from Willis. And then on the flip side, Gary, he shows you his unique athleticism and speed by beating the corner off the line of scrimmage and going get that jump ball to win the football game. And the safety got over there pretty quick, man. That safety dropped his coverage, and he got to Watson in a hurry on the game winner. And Watson still went up over both of those guys to haul in that catch. You're exactly right, Gary. Both of those catches were A++++. I mean, the Packers receiver group would be in some rough shape right now if it wasn't for Christian Watson coming back.
Yeah, no question. Hey, going back to Jaden Reed for a second, I think he's missed 8 games already this season because of a foot injury. There had been speculation. I haven't seen anything recently on this, but there was speculation he might come back in late November, early December. Do you think that's still the plan?
Gary, it wouldn't surprise me if later this week or certainly the next week they open up his 21-day window. I think that's the way it's trending. And they'll probably, you know, Watson, I think, took 14 of those 21 days. I think Watson took 2 weeks. He didn't take all three. A lot of these guys take the full three. But my hunch is that they'll open that window up for him here relatively soon, probably within the next 7 to 10 days. It could be this week, Gary, that they open it up. We'll see when they get to practice on Wednesday. You and I are doing this podcast on a Monday, so we got a couple days till that arrives. But what are we now, November 17? I think it's real fair, Gary, to think he's back probably by the second week of December at the latest.
Yeah. Okay, before we wrap this wonderful podcast up.
Do I get my Luke Musgrave rant, Gary?
30 seconds, fire away.
30 seconds? Yeah. You know I can't do anything in 30 seconds.
There's not a lot to say about him. He's been bad. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Gary, he's been borderline affront to the sport of football.
Wow. Thank you, Howard Cosell.
I guess that would be a little Howard Cosell. No, you're right, Gary. There's not much to say. Here's what really jumped out at me, though, yesterday, and I give the Packers a lot of credit for this. He played two snaps in the second half. He was
Yeah.
so dreadful that first half that the Packers said, even though they have two guys on the roster that are really number three and four tight ends at best, right? They're bad. They're mediocre to lousy football players, right? And Fitzpatrick and Wiley. I mean, Fitzpatrick gets this, hey, Fitzpatrick can block. If you watch Fitzpatrick block yesterday, it was terrible. Wiley actually has maybe some upside because he can catch the ball. But the Packers said, we've seen enough of Luke Musgrave. Even though we don't have anybody else at that position, we're not even putting him back out there in the second half. Two snaps. So it'll be interesting how many snaps he plays on Sunday, Gary, against Minnesota. Was that close to 30?
That was under. I was betting the over on that baby.
I'll just say this. Luke Musgrave better be down to his last 2 months in Green Bay.
Yeah, you know, the only thing, Robin, and I'm not going to belabor this point, but I'll just make one quick point. When the Packers drafted him, they knew he was not going to be a Tucker Kraft type guy. He's not that big physical guy. They envisioned him being like an intermediate receiver, maybe once in a while a deep threat receiver. And all I've seen from LaFleur is having him run these horizontal routes. He doesn't have a prayer. I mean, he's not strong enough, to
Well, he
break
ran
any
a lot
tackle.
of verticals the last couple of years, Gary.
He did a few times, but he's also thrown in some of these just basically sideline throws. And he's not that receiver, but yeah, he's been a major disappointment for being a second round pick. Hey, one final thing before we call it a wrap, and this is kind of a curveball. I apologize. I should have gave you a heads up on this, but
They're all good.
we're now past the midway point in the season. Give me your top three guys you think you would have in the MVP race. I'll throw mine out real quickly. Jonathan
Sure.
Taylor has rushed for 1,130 yards, nearly 200 more than James Cook. I got Drake May at number two. May has been absolutely incredible. He's thrown for a league high 2,800 yards. He's got 20 touchdowns, five interceptions. And Patriots, are in the mix. They got one of the best records in pro football. And then my third one is Stafford, who, I mean, this is incredible. 27 touchdown passes, two picks. Alexa in the background. Anyway, so those are my three. Now you might have somebody else that could, weasel in there or slide in there.
Gary, I'll just say this. Buffalo is a 3-7 football team without Josh Allen. He carries that entire organization on his back. And I feel bad because I have a hunch his elite, his great years here are going to be wasted, at least from the standpoint of not winning a Super Bowl in Buffalo because they just didn't do enough around him, or they stuck with the same head coach for far too many years where
Yeah.
you kind of knew. And Green Bay and Buffalo are in similar spots with their head coach, right? I think it's year eight in Buffalo for their guy, year seven in Green Bay for LaFleur. And eventually, do you hit a point where you just say this guy can't get you to the finish line? So I'll always have Josh Allen, and I don't even know what his stats are, Gary. I don't care.
Yeah. No,
I really don't. I mean, again, Buffalo's fighting for the they're a top 10 pick right now if they have whatever, a mediocre quarterback instead of Josh Allen, who again, Gary yesterday had six touchdowns in that game, three passing, three rushing, and he beat one hell of a good Tampa Bay team. I'm with you then. Hey, it's really tough. Your three are great, Gary. I actually hadn't realized Stafford was 27-2 until you mentioned
That's
it.
crazy,
It's absolutely crazy. So he's got to be in that discussion. You know my love for Matthew Stafford through all his years of battling garbage in
Yes,
Detroit,
I do.
finding a way to win. And I'll always vote for an ex-Badger, Gary, in Jonathan Taylor. I think it's been since Adrian Peterson, what, about 15 years ago? Since we've had a running back win this award, it's been a quarterback friendly award and a quarterback only award. And then they give, then the running back gets whatever, the AP offensive player of the year, whatever, the one
Yeah,
no
you're
one
right.
pays attention to or the one everybody forgets about in 5 seconds. If Jonathan Taylor and what are the Colts, Gary, are they about 8-2?
They are 8-2, and last year they were 8-9 for the season. So
Yeah. Yep.
He's having an incredible year.
I watched that game when they were wherever they were they in London or something like
Yeah.
that a couple of weeks ago against Atlanta, Gary? I mean, he won that game almost single-handedly. I think they were in Berlin. That's right. The guy's just unbelievable. There's no one close to him as a running back right now, and that includes Saquon Barkley. And well, I shouldn't say that because Gibbs in Detroit does. He's in that same discussion. But Taylor's having the best year. There's no question, Gary. So I guess I would go. Boy, this is tough because we
Yeah,
have such
it's tough. I think
we.
it. I'm a huge Allen fan too, but
Yeah.
I don't think he's supersedes those three.
If it depends how you value the award arena,
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
If you say most valuable to that team and where, and you look at it like where is that team without this player? Again, I think Buffalo's in the top 10 of next year's draft. So I guess I'd probably do it like this, Gary. I'd go Stafford, JT, and then Allen.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that. So. Well, Roberto, the horn has sounded. Another fabulous podcast is in the books. Thanks to you, and thanks again to our great listeners. Take care, and all the best.
For more sports news, check back every Tuesday for our latest show. You can also follow Gary on Twitter at Gary Wuffel and wuffelspressbox.com.